The lines are open. 1-300-872-911. John McKenzie. Real music, real opinions. 4CA.
This is a story from the Kent Post on Saturday. Interesting. Peter Carruthers wrote this. Leaders have blasted officials for deploying the army to southeast Queensland before the cyclone neared the coast, while flood-ravaged communities in the north had to wait until it was almost too late. JCU's disaster expert, this is Professor John Knott. You remember John numerous occasions on this program. Disaster expert Professor John Knott said, a number of elements combined to influence the speed and scale of the southeast's emergency response to Cyclone Alfred. So there you go. He said, the one thing I noticed is how much media coverage days beforehand and days after. I didn't count them, but the conversation has 6 to 10 articles on Cyclone Alfred, and there's only one article in the December floods in 2023 and the Towns floods 2019. That may have provided political motivation to get more help in getting assets deployed. Interesting, isn't it? Very interesting point. He's on the line, Professor Geoscience, College Science and Engineering, JCU, Professor John Knott. John, good morning.
Good morning, John.
A lot of people have been scratching their noggins about this, but especially now with this article's emerged, the comparison when we look at the response that's available for the southeast corner compared with what we endured late the year before last. What's your take on it?
Well, I think it was a bit lopsided, really.
Yes.
I mean, when all is said and done.
Yes.
I mean, I know Peter, you know, in his article has pointed out many facts there, but yeah, definitely. I mean, the amount of media coverage was really just over the top for an event that, well, okay, they got a fair bit of rain, they got some wind, but it's something that's fairly common, you know, in the north from Mackay upwards or Rockhampton upwards. Over many, many years now, and we don't seem to get anywhere near the coverage. We do get coverage, but, we don't get anywhere near that sort of coverage and interest in the disasters that occur up here. So, yeah, I do think it was a bit lopsided.
So it's the coverage, the media coverage, that stimulates the level of government response? Is that what you're saying?
Well, no, not necessarily, but, I mean, it will help. I mean, you know, if there's that much media coverage, you've got a federal election coming up. It makes sense that the Prime Minister is going to go there, isn't he? And the same with David Crisafulli. I mean, you know, he's the new Premier. He wants to be seen to be doing the right thing. He did come to Wingham. I know that's his hometown, so he's got an interest there. But as I say in the article, I mean, you know, it can make or break politicians in terms of how they respond to disasters. And we've only got to look at Scott Morrison with Hawaii and the fires. That didn't serve him very well. So, you know, there's a lot of media to be covered and interest, then any smart politician's going to be there, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just looking at the lineup of all the equipment that became available in the south compared with, well, we were lucky with the Lion's Den. We had Magoo in his single-seater helicopter. Doesn't quite compare.
No, it doesn't. I mean, he was a real hero, that guy.
Wasn't he?
Yeah, amazing stuff, that really was. But,
yes.
Yeah, and it's often the case with disasters that there are these incredibly talented and skilled people that step up and at their own expense too, you know. I mean, he would have been paying for that chop fuel. So, yeah.
John, when you consider, I mean, you've been doing this for years and years, and to your great credit, you go in after cyclones to learn more about the impact of cyclones and the damage they do and the threats they pose. But what can we learn from this? You know, we saw this overwhelming response from government levels down in the southeast corner. How can we do better in future threats from weather events up here?
Well, I mean, preparation increases resilience. So, you know, just being really, really well prepared. I mean, look, you know, not saying anything against emergency services because they do a great job. They always do a great job. I guess probably they would say that they probably need more resources. So just having, you know, a number of people out with boats and ready to go and thinking it through, you know, particularly for the flood victims during the December 23 floods at the beaches, most definitely. So resources are really, really important for sure. But yeah, I mean, you know, the ADF is also really important. If we know a big event's going to occur, then probably bringing in, you know, those giant container-sized generators that we all seem to need and being here on the spot, you know, if we know a cyclone's going to hit somewhere. So, yeah, just bringing in all those resources beforehand or being somewhere close by that they can get in here very quickly, straight after it.
Yeah. What about, well, political representation and the quality of it and the strength of it and media noise, if you like? Are they two things that could be looked at to get better results?
Well, yes, definitely. As we saw with the recent event, Alfred down south, I mean, the media were all over that for the whole week beforehand.
Yes.
And there was so much coverage. It was just... Well, it was driving us all a bit crazy up here in the north, I think, just how much coverage there was on it.
Yeah.
And as I say, politicians, I really think David Crisafulli did a good job, you know, with the Ingham floods and with the Alfred event down south. He was right on top of it. He came across confidently.
Yes.
He looked in charge, you know, and that's what you need to do. You need to look in charge and be confident and have the ear of everyone, and if you're a state politician or a local politician, try and have the ear of the feds so you can get the ADF in as quickly as possible, most definitely. So, I think politicians have got a really big role to play at those times and to be really competent. And, I take my hat off to David Crisafulli because he came across that way.
I thought so too. Remarkable, actually, and he's suddenly the most popular leader in the country. Don't go away, John. Once again, and it was an honourable mention just recently with the Palm Cove upgrade, if we'll call it that. Interesting concept. There was a public meeting, I can't remember how many, 130 or something. Hands going up to support it wasn't not an overwhelming vote of support. Interesting, the conversation featured a point of view expressed by you. If indeed they were going to put virtually a wall around the jetty, that's an easy way to put it, to create a harbour, etc. That's all fine, a stone wall there. But the suggestion was, you were quoted actually as saying, if you do that, you're going to actually encourage the sands along the Palm Cove beach to actually head north, which would be, I presume, around the rock wall and end up, I don't know, on beaches to the north of there. Was that the point you were making, generally speaking?
Well, not quite. What I was saying is it would stop sand flow or very much limit sand flow to the beaches north of Buchan's Point.
Okay.
So but basically, it's yes, you're right. It is a big rock wall going out around the jetty. It's a big groin. It would, you know, the plans show, and I know they're only artist's impression, but the plans show it extending out a fair bit further than the jetty.
Yeah.
And what that does is it traps sand on the southern side of that groin.
Yes.
And whilst, okay, you might say, well, we don't have big populations, you know, for the rest of Cairns to the north or even all the way up to Port Douglas, but the highway's there. And the highway is pretty close to the coast in many sections along there. And if you starve the beaches of sand, they will erode.
Oh.
And you'll have the sea lapping right up against the highway. So
wow.
It would cost. Now, that's a main road, so it's a state government road. It would cost the main roads people or state government lots of money to shore up that highway. And it would also, you know, completely muck up plans for the surf club at Ellis Beach to move to the other side of the highway, which I understand they've got approval for, and they want to do that. There's no way you'd do that, and you're just going to end up with big rock walls, you know, like we've got at Machin's and the southern end of Clifton along that section of coast. And that's a very popular area up there for yachties and beachgoers, tourists. So, you know, there would be huge consequences for doing that. And I pointed out at that meeting that I counted about 62 marinas along the east coast of Queensland, and none, absolutely none, are at the northern ends of sandy embayments facing the open ocean.
Oh.
And there's good reason for that. They're all at the southern ends. And if you think about Cairns, we've got Trinity Inlet, southern end of an embayment. We've got Yorkeys Knob, southern end of an embayment. And the reason that they're often located there is because they don't inhibit the longshore transport of sand. And so they're fine in those locations for that reason.
Mm.
But you put it at the very northern end, and Palm Cove is the northern end of that, you know, large embayment from Taylor Point all the way up to Buchan Point.
Mm.
It's the worst possible place you could ever do it. So it would be really bad for the coast further north from Palm Cove.
Do you know, if it wasn't for your studies, I don't know, there might be some people would have realised that, but I certainly wouldn't have been one of them. This is remarkable. That term embayment I haven't heard before. How do you spell that? E-M-B-A-Y-M-E-N-T, is it?
Exactly. Yep, got it.
New term. Can you just expand on that, please? Not the only one, I bet, that's only hearing that for the first time.
Well, I mean, the word bay comes out of that, right. You know, so it's like an embayment or a scoop out of the coastline, if you like. And it's like a big bay, but we, you know, the formal term is embayment. And so it's that sort of, curved part of the coastline. You know, the whole coastline is sort of scalloped out, really, if you think about it.
Yes.
And normally you've got beaches at the back of that.
Yes.
And those beaches actually, I won't go too technical now because there are other terms, but they're not symmetrical. They're sort of more tightly curved at the southern end and they're more drawn out at the northern end. And that's just because of the way the sand transports up the coast. And most of the sand along the east coast of Australia goes from south to north, all the way from Victoria up past us here in Cairns. It all travels from south to north.
Mm.
So putting something at the northern end of that embayment or that bay really mucks up the coastal system. As I point out to my students at uni, I first started uni in 1977, and I know that makes me sound incredibly ancient, and I probably am. Right? And they all look at me because they're all these 18 and 19-year-old kids going, oh, my God, that's older than my parents. One of the very first lectures, and I'll never forget it, in 1977, I went to a lecture, and they told us that 70% of the world's sandy beaches are eroding, and one of the worst things you can do in an eroding beach is to stick groins out. They're the rock walls or similar sort of walls that extend out perpendicular to the shoreline because they trap sand. Now, they put in lots of groins on the Gold Coast after the 1960s and they've ripped most of them out. They've got a new system of sand nourishment there, which they're fortunate to be able to do, but they found that the groins just weren't working there. So in the 1980s, et cetera, they were ripping all of those things out.
And
you've only got to look at what council put in groins at Holloway's. And within a matter of months, the area, the beaches to the north of the groins were starting to erode and erode really badly. So they're ripping them out now. So, the marina, proposed marina at Palm Cove would just be a very large-scale groin, which would have very large-scale impacts.
Isn't this interesting? So the council didn't put a call through to you before they putting in that, well, for example, the Holloway's Beach one. So... They did call you or not?
No, they didn't. But they've learnt. You know, they've thought, oh, this isn't working. I mean, working the hard way, and they've put in some interesting new designs, which I don't know if they'll work or not. But there's a good chance that they may work. You know, and they're not those sort of designs. These what they call little headlands. They're sort of like an artificial reef just offshore. Mm. They won't inhibit sand flow along the coast.
Yeah,
and that's the good thing about them. So. Okay. And they're going to do that at Clifton Beach as well, so I understand. So that's a positive step, I think, from council to do that.
Now, you would have heard, obviously, what you'd stated about the situation at Palm Cove must have come up at that meeting, I presume. I wasn't there, so I don't know. But there was feedback around for the next 48 hours saying, Professor John Knott, highly qualified professor at JCU, said, this is a negative if indeed you are going ahead with that plan. And interestingly enough, a whole lot of people had picked up on that matter, that information that you'd got out there before that meeting.
Well, that's good. It would be a very negative thing in terms of the coastal situation. You know, look, I appreciate that many people at Palm Cove want the beach suburb there or the commercial area there to be revamped and to be revitalised. For sure, I'm all for that. You know, I'm walking along there every morning, so I'm a sort of local person at Clifton and Palm Cove. And people were pointing out that Trinity Beach appears to be revitalised now with the new sort of, I don't know what you call it, that big complex on the corner there, the pub and the eatery and all that sort of jazz. And it's a very, very popular location. And as I pointed out to the meeting, well, look, there's an example of a beach that has become revitalised commercially, lots of people visiting, without a marina. So, you know, you didn't need a marina at Trinity Beach to get that buzzing. Maybe there's other ways you can revitalise Palm Cove if that's what they want, you know. So,
would there be a way of making that jetty more practical or more usable, if you like, without doing damage to the bay, if you like?
Possibly. I understand that Craig Crawford got the Department of Main Roads, who also have a marine section, to design something there that would allow boats to come in more safely. So when the southeasters are blowing and it's a bit rough, it's a bit tricky for some boats to come and moor against that jetty.
It is.
But he didn't release those plans before the election, and obviously he didn't win Barron River back again. So we've not; those plans haven't seen the light of day. But it would be interesting to know what those plans are. They must be in a filing cabinet somewhere in Main Roads in town, so I wasn't privy to be able to see them. But, you know, it's entirely possible to do something and make it a bit safer for boating without necessarily inhibiting sand movement along the coast.
Well, 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 John, thank you, especially releasing the information that wouldn't have got out if you hadn't just said it on air about those plans, because Bree James, the now member for Barron River, would almost certainly have access to those plans if they haven't
I would think so. Exactly. She's a state member.
If they haven't been removed or whatever. Gee, that's really interesting. John, the whole discussion's been interesting. You and I haven't spoken for years, but we used to do it on a more regular basis. I think we should head back to those days because
We used to be on TV all the time together, John.
Yes.
There was the giant and the midget walking along the Esplanade.
But we've got to go back to those days because, the level of threat, as we just saw recently in obviously with Jasper and the recent one on the level of threat is still there. So we've got to get that information out there more frequently so we're not caught unawares. John, thank you for this contribution today. Really worthwhile.
Thank you, John. Thank you very much.
Isn't he an interesting man? Professor Geoscience, College of Science and Engineering at James Cook University, Professor John Knott.